slaughtered by word of mouth and the misrepresentation of those who might not have been present when some of the world's most significant events took place. Channelers Barry and Connie Strom bring through the spirits of those who actually witnessed or took part in these historical events and lets them tell their stories in their own words. Welcome to Channeling History. And now, here are your hosts, Barry and Connie Strom.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to Channeling History. We're the only show where we speak to the souls that made things happen. I'm Barry Strom, your host, and I'll be doing the channeling tonight.
And I'm Connie Strom, your co-host, and I would also like to welcome you to our show. For the past 2 weeks, we've been having a roundtable discussion with the souls of Supreme Court Justices Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Sandra Day O'Connor, and Antonin Scalia. Their answers have been very interesting, and we're going to do a third week of questions. The first two parts are available on our YouTube channel. The YouTube channel is in the name of Barry Strom and at this point has over 560 videos. We're currently consolidating all of our audio broadcasts onto a new platform named podbean.com. Just go to the site and search Barry Strom.
Okay, recently, and you may well be aware of this, but I posted a video where I put the images of Jesus taken by a computer from what it looked like on the Shroud of Turin. I also compared it with a modern painting that was done of him by a person, by a child that had interacted with him and remembered what he looked like. I also talked about the energies that would be required for the resurrection. The video is on my YouTube channel. If you missed it, please go look at it. Once you look at this video, you will never, ever have any doubts about the fact whether Jesus truly existed and whether he had the powers of God during the resurrection. It's an amazing video. Tell your friends about it. I guarantee you'll be doing them a favor. Okay, Connie, let's do a short disclaimer, and then when we get on with the show, we'll be talking with these wonderful justices one more time. The opinions or statements voiced on our show are the channeled words of the spirits and do not necessarily reflect our opinions, those of the Pararex Network, or of our sponsors. And before we channel, we also say a prayer of protection. So Connie, let's do the prayer and get on with the show.
God, please grant us your wisdom and protection. Grant us the knowledge that we can handle and keep us safe from all things that will harm us. Keep the messages positive and pure love. Keep us safe from our egos. We ask these things in the light of the seen, the unseen, and the honesty of God.
Okay, Connie, tonight we are going to continue to use the roundtable discussion format. We've had some very, very good input, especially from attorneys, about how great the show is and that there's absolutely no doubt that we truly are speaking with these great legal minds. So, Connie, let's do it.
Okay, once again, we would like to thank the three of you for coming through for us tonight. Each of you had very strong beliefs and pursued them with honor throughout your lives. As you answer these questions tonight, we would appreciate if you would point out if any of your opinions have changed now that you're on the other side. So let's start with our first question of the evening. Do you feel our country is better off today after the current interpretation of Roe v. Wade?
We are going to start with Justice Ginsburg. That is a very difficult question to answer. Right now, the country is in turmoil because of the uncertainty that has been caused by the overturning of Roe v. Wade. As yet, the states have taken definitive actions on this, so there is a lot that is very much up in the air. I think after the states determined how they feel about abortion, that it will be much better, but at the present time, the country is split over abortion. There are many people, especially young people as we watch, that seem to be turning in favor of pro-life. But I think it remains to be seen what it is going to be like after all of the states have taken their votes and after it's been determined how each state wants to approach abortion. After they take the vote, it'll be possible that adjoining states have different interpretations. One state, it may be legal, and then adjoining state, it may be not legal. So I see many problems in the future. Justice O'Connor. Much of what Ruth just said is very accurate. The interpretation, the current interpretation, is that the states must make their opinions. Until that takes place, there will be great disputes among people. When the states decide to vote on the issue, there will be some very nasty elections taking place. And when it is, everyone has determined that how that state wants to approach the problem, there will be states where you can be arrested for it, and next door, it can be perfectly legal. In my opinion, the federal government needs to approach the problem and give a definitive answer to it. There should be a very, very clear interpretation. And sometimes leaving answers up to the states can create great problems. Justice Scalia. I feel that there never has been justification for abortion in the Constitution. I think that individuals interpreted the Constitution in the way they wanted to and against the true meaning of the law. Now, it is up to individual states. If our legislatures had any nerve, they would come up with a unified answer so that it would not continue to be debated in all of the 50 states. You will have 50 different answers, and individuals in certain states will create amnesty for abortion, and other states will outlaw it. I wish that there was a simple answer to this, but I fear there is not.
This past month, over 300,000 individuals entered the United States illegally. Once an individual crosses the border, do they have any legal rights?
Justice O'Connor. Yes. Once they cross the border, they are under our legal protection. If a woman is pregnant and she has the child becomes a citizen of the country, of our country, and has all of the legal rights and protections entitled to it as any other citizen. The rate of entry that is taking place will have great repercussions. The federal government must determine how illegal immigration is going to be treated. It has been allowed to grow out of control. When there were small amounts of individuals coming into the country illegally, they had certain rights, but it did not have a major effect on the country. I felt that they needed to be protected, and I felt that the United States should have been a country where people could come for protection and for a better life. The problem has grown out of control, and much has changed in recent times as to the risk of terrorist threat. The government, through legislation, has got to solve this problem. Justice Scalia. What is taking place on our border today is a disgrace. Our laws are made to protect the citizens of this country. When you allow in millions of people that we have not been able to test, to understand their motives truly, to require that they are able to earn a living and not become a social burden. That is what has taken place in the last 3 years. The government, the House and the Senate are making this a political issue. This could become an issue of survival for the country. If there is any one thing that both parties should agree to, it is coming up with a logical solution. They should close the border until they can establish a system where individuals can have a speedy trial in the event that they are requesting permanent status and protection. Justice Ginsburg. I always felt that the United States should be a place where individuals could flee to if they are threatened, where they can have the safety of a strong judicial system, and where they can be treated equally under our immigration laws. Currently, illegal immigration, and I use the word illegal, I should use probably a softer word, but when individuals just come across our border, they are sadly breaking our laws. Many of our laws need to be better defined. But the rate of individuals that are coming across our border without following the legal steps required is unsustainable. The government, the House and the Senate must agree to an answer that will be equitable for those that are entering the country, as well as give an equitable solution to all of the citizens. Sadly, there is no way that such vast numbers can be analyzed, that those individuals can be certified, that they can pay their own way. And especially medical costs for these individuals are out of control. Medical costs in general in the United States are out of control. if the hospitals are required to absorb the costs of these millions of individuals without them being able to pay their own way, the potential to wreck our medical system and to force the closure of medical centers is very great. This is a multifaceted problem. And our politicians seem not to be willing to attempt to solve it. But it is truly an issue that can bring great financial damage to the country under the current interpretation. I always took a more liberal view of immigration, but now I see the terrible risks that are involved when it is allowed to continue without strict controls.
Point out some very good things there. Our military is currently engaged in the Middle East with kinetic strikes against the Houthis in Yemen and terrorist groups in Iraq and Syria. At what point does the president need legislative authority to carry out the strikes?
Justice Scalia. The president does not have the ability to declare a war. That is up to our elected bodies. If the actions that he is taking can create our country being involved in an active kinetic war, then he must seek approval. The presidents have been trying to gain more authority. They have been trying to extend the interpretation of what presidents are allowed to do. But an individual should not be allowed to create an act that will force our country to become involved in an active war. Justice Ginsburg. The powers of the president must be limited. The government, the elected officials are the ones that must be able to declare war. If the current president attacks a major country in retaliation for what they are doing to us, he will de facto be declaring war, which he does not have the ability to do. I would hope that he works in cooperation with the proper elected officials before actions are taken that commit us on a path to a major war. Justice O'Connor. The President of the United States has the right to make decisions that are very time sensitive. For instance, if another country was to declare a nuclear attack upon the United States, the response time for the state to try to protect the people is so short that legislators could only be told what is taking place. But in the event that a predetermined action causes the United States to be involved in a major war, then the elected officials have got to be able to make that decision. There is no one person that should be able to commit our country to a decision that will create a definite involvement in major wars. Today, you're seeing a situation where free trade on the waterways of the Suez Canal and other bodies of water are being infringed upon. When our individuals are being killed or attacked, elected officials must play an active role in the decision-making process in following the advice of the military. I am currently of the opinion, as I watch here, that our presidents are given too much authority and need to be able to consult more readily with elected officials.
Past decisions struck down affirmative action programs at Harvard and the University of North Carolina. Is there any limit to other factors, such as socioeconomic status and geography, that can be used to achieve racial diversity?
Justice O'Connor. Racial equality has changed drastically during the last 50 to 60 years. There was a time that individuals of color were not able to gain acceptance to certain employment or to certain institutions of higher learning. Federal legislation was passed that was meant to bring, perhaps not an equality, but a system that would offset the evils of the past. Many institutions used that legislation in a manner that was very discretionary. I firmly believe that our laws have got to protect everyone equally. When you reach a point that anyone's social class or ethnic background is given an advantage over another, that is not equal protection under the law. It is very difficult to get a true readout on how these situations are being defined by the different institutions. Racial diversity is hopefully a way of defining racial equality. When two groups differ as to that definition, then you're realizing situations that are not covered in the equal protection clauses. Justice Scalia. Institutions have taken advantage of legislation that was intended to define racial diversity and racial equality. Many institutions used the available legislation to act against certain socioeconomic groups. You'll find today that in many institutions, Asians are not treated equally. In many institutions, individuals of color are given advantages over other socioeconomic groups. I would hope that in the future, legislation will be tweaked to truly give equal protection to everyone. But that is not taking place at this time. Justice Ginsburg. It is critical that the government gives equal protection to everyone. For generations, people of color have not been treated equally. How do you compensate the sins of the past? Many institutions have overreacted and favor certain socioeconomic groups. Certain groups of ethnic origin are being mistreated. Asians would fall under that category at the present time in many institutions. There are institutions that favor people of certain religions. There are institutions that favor certain ethnic backgrounds. The government in its legislative process must be very careful in how they approach these situations. Institutions are only too happy to take advantage of loopholes in legislation in order to fulfill their own desires, and quite often, individuals are not treated equally under the law. It is very difficult to assure equality. It should not be so, but sadly, the way the rules have been interpreted, many individuals are not treated equally.
Okay. Would each of you share your opinion with us concerning adding more members to the Supreme Court?
Justice Scalia. The Supreme Court has functioned very effectively with the current number of members. There have been times that the pendulum swings towards conservative government, and there are times that the pendulum swings towards a more liberal form of government. Under the electoral system in the United States. Elections have consequences. And one of those consequences is that the elected president gets to nominate members of the court. The system has worked well for many, many years. And we are seeing, as we watch, political parties in power attempting to add more justices that are members of that the same political thought as the president. Should that take place, you must be aware that the next president will do the same thing when the parties change. Keeping the same number of justices is a way of assuring long-term stability. Once one president starts to add, the next president will add as well. And there may be a time that you have 100 justices on the court. I would hope that the politicians have enough common sense not to ever change the size of the court. Justice Ginsburg. I must agree with my friend on this. The number of justices has functioned very well for quite a long period of time. The political parties in power try to use the threat of putting additional judges in order to influence decisions made by the court. We have never been influenced, but it is quite possible that the threat to pack the court can be a very viable threat. And it is possible that justices could be swayed by that threat. Now that I'm over here, I would like to see that threat removed. I think that they would be doing the court a great service if, through the legislative process, they decreed that the current justices, number of justices, is fixed and cannot be altered into the future. Justice O'Connor. I agree that the threat to pack the court with more judges of a particular political bent is very destructive. The Supreme Court is meant to be the last bastion of equality, honesty, and the ability to make a final determination of the Constitution. There can only be one reason that a president would threaten to add more justices, and that is to bring in more individuals to sway the court and to influence it so that that president could take advantage of the court's decisions while he is in office. My friends are very correct to say that such a move would be greeted by the next president as the opportunity to to add even more justices. Adding justices is like stepping in quicksand. It is fine that a president gets to nominate justices that follow his beliefs, his political beliefs. But that should only take place as vacancies occur on the court. That has been the traditional way, and in my mind, that has to be the way of the future.
Do you feel that a strict code of ethics should be enacted by the Supreme Court?
Justice Ginsburg. I never felt when I was on the court that any of the individuals that served with me were doing anything that was ethically incorrect. The justices, when I was on the court, were capable of isolating personal gifts, personal emotions, from the way that they interpreted the Constitution. And all the time that I was on the court, and it was for quite a while, I was never aware of any situation where a written code of ethics would be required. The judges respected each other, and they felt that personal integrity was required in order that the court would be considered the final arbiter of justice. I do not see today that anything has changed. If a situation arises where one of the justices shows questionable ethics, the other justices are quite capable of taking action. Justice Scalia. I do not feel that it is necessary that there would be a strict code of ethics. We take an oath to uphold the Constitution, and that oath is adequate. I do not see any time that I served, or as I watch from over here, that there are ethical violations that influence how a justice has voted or has written decisions. So I do not think that it is something that should be taken on by the legislative body or by the justices themselves. Justice O'Connor. I agree that during my time on the court, I did not see any situations where I felt that the honesty or integrity of a justice had been compromised. A code of ethics is only as good as those who are chosen to enforce it. The legislative body should not become involved with the judicial body. And if there was a code of ethics, you would see politicians trying to bring actions under that code against people that they feel made the wrong decisions because that politician feels one way or another. I agree that there should be no written code of ethics. The oath that the justices take is quite adequate, and I do not see a need for anything additional.
Do you feel that the quality of the justices on the Supreme Court has improved in the last 20 years?
Justice O'Connor, that is a very difficult question. There have always been justices that were more favorably, let me rephrase that. There's always been justices that have been more active and more in the public eye than others on the Supreme Court. There have always been justices that were brilliant, and there have always been justices that were not nearly as brilliant as others. I do not see that anything has changed recently on the court. There are some very astute justices. There are justices there today that bring different opinions, and there are justices that reflect more modern interpretations. I would say that basically the quality of the judges are the same as it has been in the recent past. Justice Scalia, when I was on the court, I tried to be very proactive in making decisions based on the written Constitution. Today you have justices that do the same thing. Today you have justices that want to try to interpret the wording of the Constitution and change the intent and adapt it to more modern times. I think that the justices today are essentially equal in abilities to those that have served for the last, say, 50 years. Justice Ginsburg. I think when Justice Scalia and I were on the court, that our differences of opinion served a great value. My liberal background and his conservative background often brought about debate and conversation that would show the pros and cons of many issues. Today, I'm not seeing multiple justices that have such diverse backgrounds. I am seeing very qualified judges. Modern education has made the justices much more aware of many things. Modern technologies have allowed better research on issues. As I look at some of the current decisions and opinions that are written, I can see that they reflect very high intellect and, in many instances, very detailed research and accuracies. I still see opinions that are very opposite on the same issue, which I feel is a very good thing. So I would say that, no, the justices are as qualified as they have ever been.
We have a question from one of our listeners. Now that you're on the other side and see the bigger picture, what has been your biggest change in thought or opinion?
We addressed this last week.
I'm sorry.
In much detail. This is Justice Ginsburg speaking. And my biggest changes in opinion were basically over abortion, because now that I'm on the other side, I see that the protection of the babies in the womb is very, very important. And I could see that in the past, many babies have been killed because of it.
Okay. Do you feel that there should be any age restrictions on the Supreme Court? And if you do, at what age do you think a justice should have to retire?
Justice Scalia. I definitely feel that there should be no age restrictions on the court. It has been my experience that if any of the justices felt that they had, shall we say, lost it, or were having problems with focusing, that they would retire from the court. The justices are well aware that they are the final arbitrator in legal definition and in interpretation of the Constitution. They feel a great responsibility to what they do. Each justice on that court feels a huge responsibility. They understand that it is an incredible honor to be named to the court. And I am very confident that any of the judges that feel that they are becoming incapable due to age would be the first to step forward and to remove themselves from such a prestigious position. Justice Ginsburg. I agree with Justice Scalia in this. All of us that serve on the Supreme Court are aware of the great honor that it is. If the Supreme Court loses its ability to debate, to research, to totally understand what is taking place in the different cases, then there is no backup. Each judge or justice that I have ever served with at the level of the Supreme Court is very much aware of their responsibilities. They know that if anything happens, that they cannot give an honest appraisal of the law that concerns the case, that there is no other place for an individual to go to find protection under the law. So I feel that there is no need for an age restriction. I've served at an advanced age, but my age, I felt, never had any effect. I had great people that would do research for me. I had great respect for the law. Sometimes my decisions were not popular, but I always felt that they were well researched. Justice O'Connor. I retired from the court at what could, I guess, could be looked at as a relatively early age. I wanted to have my remaining years with my family. I felt that there were times that my understanding was clouded somewhat by age, and I did not want that anyone before the court would not be treated fairly. All of the other judges that I served with, I felt were entirely competent. I always believed that it was part of the responsibility of the oath of the office that if you felt that you were inadequate, that you would remove yourself and let a younger and more vigorous individual take your place.
Okay, it's been an honor to have you all. Would you each like to make a final statement?
Justice Scalia, I would like to thank you for allowing us this much time to speak. You covered many different situations, and your questions were actually, I thought, quite good. I hope that individuals will take time to listen to the answers. All of our answers are now tapered with the fact that we are on the other side and that we have access to information that we never had in life. We understand now the true importance of protecting those that need protection. The Supreme Court represents the final stage of protection for individuals under the law. If the court succumbs to political pressures, then the entire system of government that our founding fathers put together will fall apart. So thank you so much. I truly appreciate this, and I know you've had me on before, and should I be invited back, I would undoubtedly accept the invitation. Justice Ginsburg. In life, many of my decisions were not popular, especially when we had conservative presidents. I came from a different background. I was very liberal in many of my policies, and there were times that I felt that the Constitution was not keeping pace with the modern cultures of individuals living in the United States. I felt that there should be different interpretations to certain segments of the Constitution. And I felt that in many instances, protections under the law were inadequate. Now that I'm on the other side, I must admit that I'm seeing some things that show me that I should have taken some different opinions, especially in the area of abortion. I know God feels very strongly that the babies need to be protected. I felt in life that the rights of the mother were very important as well. There has to be some type of compromise, and perhaps future generations can think of those. But I thank you very much for allowing me to speak. It's been a great honor, and I will be happy to return when invited. Justice O'Connor. I've only been on this side for a short period of time, and I really wondered whether I should come forth and try to speak after so little time on this side. I tried to be more of a centrist on the courts. I tried to look out for individuals. I tried to protect those that needed protection. I want to stress that the Supreme Court needs to be protected. It needs to be protected from political influence. Political parties should not have the opportunity to stack the court. Presidents should be allowed to name the nominees that they want. They should be allowed to name people that have the same political beliefs. But if the Supreme Court becomes another political weapon, then indeed you will find that your country, our country, will cease to exist. So thank you very much for allowing me to speak. I enjoyed it. And I also would be willing to come back in the future. So thank you.
Thank you all. You're three wonderful guests, and we feel honored.
Okay. That was great. Listen to all three parts of it. Their answers are incredible, and I guarantee you will learn much. So next week, we're going to speak with three spirits that made a point of helping others: Andrew Carnegie, Danny Thomas, and Fred Rogers. In all of the things that we speak about, helping others and being kind, following the golden rule, these are also very important. And giving is equally important. There are so many people right now that need help. Next week, I think you will truly appreciate what these individuals did in life. We've been with all of them before, and I know their stories. So next week, I think you'll truly enjoy what you're hearing. My 10th book, Modern Messages of the Archangels, available for purchase. You can get signed copies on my website, barrystrom.com. All the books are available on Amazon. Many people are troubled, and if people would take the time to read some of these books, it would solve many of their problems. The books are great devotionals, great information. Individuals that are troubled, it is well worth their time.
I'd like to thank you all for joining us this evening on Channeling History. I'd like you all to have a wonderful week. God bless you all.
Yes, the last 3 weeks I think have just been exceptional for the show, but of course that's my opinion.
We do have one guest who said invite them back.
Well, I think three nights is probably enough for it.
So for now.
Next week, it's going to be a great show. Anyway, thank you for listening. Join us Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Para-X Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to Channeling History. Tune in again next week for another electrifying episode, as we never know who will make an appearance or who will come through the portal. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2020. Our story begins by Kevin MacLeod, licensed through Incompetech.com.